Today is June 24th, 2019. I'm stretching. It's been a productive morning. This is Senor Cage, and this is Helping Youth Internalize Positive Behavior Part 2. I'm thinking in my mind it's going to be at least 4 parts to this. I want you to go back and listen to part 1 and digest it. You got any questions, comments, feedback, concerns, let me know. Excuse me. Super, super important. You hear me use that word often. Super, very, very, very important. Very important that we as a population internalize positive behavior. However, it is of utmost significance that our babies internalize positive behavior. And positive behavior is not anything that we got to think too deep about. Positive behavior is more of the behavior that's going to take them in the direction to achieve and fulfillment, realizing their full potential, and fulfilling their God-given identity, purpose, and destiny. Easy, breezy stuff. It is also of utmost importance times too that we teach them through conversation and demonstration, because when they get in environments, if they have yet to internalize this behavior, then they will be subject to their circumstances, external environments, people, places, things, ideas, hence possibly equating to unwise decisions and unpleasant circumstances, negative consequences. Let's move forward. There's a deeper depth in terms of internalizing, and maybe one day I'll share, but for this segment of the podcast, I'll stay focused on the topic at hand, and we'll identify two problems that our youth face when in attempts to internalize positive behavior. I'll touch upon the third one in part 3, and then give you the strategy on how to make this happen. Let's move forward, my people. How do we teach our kids, our youth, our teenagers to internalize positive behavior? The answer is to pull the weed and to tap root. When you pulling weeds, we don't have the ability to pull weeds. This is a kingdom principle. God empowers us to pull weeds through what's called deliverance. Weeds are dysfunctional behaviors. The tap root is the main root. Oftentimes, when we encounter people, the root is considered to be the origin. And once we identify the origin, we can trace back that surface behavior to the origin, the beginning. We have a consensus that many people have roots of rejection. That's a tap root for a lot of people. The tap root is the main root, and then it spawns out into other dysfunctional behaviors or circumstances. Rejection equates to abandonment, insecurity, fear. Normally, those behaviors and those spirits can be traced back to a tap root, a main root of rejection. I want you to keep in mind that in this segment, I'll be referring to conscious, CONSCIOUS, as weeds. Weeds will be considered in this segment as a dysfunctional behavior we see on the surface. The subconscious is the root, the underneath the conscious. That's going to be connected to the memory bank where the thoughts connected to the behavior are located. We look at behaviors, and then we look at the thoughts connected to the behavior that's rooted in the subconscious. I'll also be talking about the taproot as the central, most dominant subconscious thought that results in the dysfunctional service behavior. I've already alluded to rejection being a taproot because it lies deep within the surface. You see kids manifesting in the negative aspect, which at times they will say T-up. T-up can have a negative connotation. Or they are acting uncivil in environments that demand that they be civilized and respectful of, especially elders. These are service behaviors that's connected to roots. One other thought I want you to keep in mind, that all dysfunctional behavior are not theatrical. Theatrical behavior is considered as a performance. A performance occurs when a young person is putting on the show for attention. So not all dysfunctional behavior is theatrical. Not all dysfunctional behavior looks for attention. Sometimes a person has a legitimate issue and unconsciously they don't know. Sometimes dysfunctional behavior, when they're conscious of it, they're looking for attention. And I would say in my mind, as my evolution as a professional and as an individual, I would put a disclaimer on this thought, meaning it's subject to change. But now that I've come into a different revelation of behavior, I would say that all dysfunctional behavior is theatrical, because it's looking for the attention of love. People see attention as a form of love, and everybody needs love. We want love, but we need love to function in society. As I said before, the performances can occur when the youth is putting on a show for attention. Sometimes youth put on a show, sometimes they are the director, and sometimes they're the actor. A director meaning that I'm putting in place and I'm consciously invoking myself. I want attention and I'm doing it. I'm not thinking about it. I'm doing it with conscience, and I'm intentional. Sometimes the dysfunctional behavior in the surface, what you see on the surface, is not intentional. So I'm hoping that you're gathering this. We can easily see dysfunctional behavior on the surface. And so there are several dysfunctional behavior characteristics that fly under the radar that we identify with unacceptable behavior because they are not theatrical. From my personal study and an observation, these behaviors are usually very subtle and passive aggressive in nature. I want you to think such as this. When I'm in different environments and I'm working and facilitating and mentoring and teaching, and I see a young person isolate themselves from the group, I understand that service behavior, that's dysfunction. It's not theatrical, though. It's not the person putting on the show. The person sincerely feels that they don't want to be bothered with the group. Therefore, they isolate themselves. That is a dysfunctional behavior in that particular setting, because that setting calls for us to come together as a group. However, you have people or individuals, young people, that will distance themselves intentionally from the group. You also have in different environments, let's say, for example, you at a mall and you notice that a young person is using the phone as a coping mechanism. They may be with a group of friends and they'll particularly isolate or specifically isolate themselves from that group of friends because of some type of conflict that ensued. And we have to teach our young people how to resolve conflict. Conflict always begins internal and then it manifests externally. We have to have conversations with them and give them practical strategies in order for them to build confidence to conquer this. The exercise is an internal work. The exercise is an internal work and an external work. Internally, meaning going into the depths, into the roots of who they are. And then also give them practical strategies on how to cope and how to begin to exercise these strategies to resolve conflict with their peers. As far as the deep depths of it, the roots, I don't ever advise any person to attempt make that attempt. In this setting, you want to be as a licensed professional, therefore you would have to go to school to be some type of clinical technician or a clinical therapist to be able to help the people get free. You do have people that have been appointed by God to be able to address these issues. But on a practical level, in the secular arena, in the traditional workspace, make sure that you get your license and you get the proper schooling if you desire to function on that level. Myself is included with this because I'm going back to school to be able to help people in this matter as well. I want you to consider one other thought, that eliminating dysfunctional behavior, which are considered as weeds on the surface, and establishing positive behavior is a process. This process does not happen overnight. Let's be realistic. When we were growing up, we had positive behavior, but we have several dysfunctional behaviors. And the dysfunctional behaviors, we had to be addressed and corrected, and we had to be involved in the conversation, and the demonstration that conversation had to be consistent in the lives of the people that we were around, hence our household, in order for our behaviors to change and transform. Now, some of our behaviors are dormant. They still lie the same. It takes different environments to excite or incite that behavior to come to the surface. But what I'm saying is that let's not think that when we start this process that it's going to happen overnight, because it's not. It is a process. Everybody's process is different based on their experience, their cognitive ability, and more importantly, where God has them. God has some people on the potter's wheel in certain areas longer than another, based on what he desires from their life and where their life is going. We will pause at this time for a break. I want you to really think about it and meditate on what was given. It will be a lot of information, but I'm going to make it as simple as can be in order for you and the people that may be listening to this to understand it, because I want you to get a good understanding for application in terms of coaching people in this aspect possibly, or being able to adjust in different environments and maneuver through these different behaviors. Because in order to maneuver in different circles, you got to be able to really identify certain behaviors and maneuver or sidestep those behaviors and not focus on the person so much as far as them being, as my kids would say, ratchet or dysfunctional. Once, personally, when I'm in an environment, I notice a dysfunctional behavior, I can see the behavior and understand that the behavior that the person is reflecting is not who they truly are, and be able to still position myself to love that person. At times it can be difficult because iron sharpens iron. The conflict is ensuing to cause both parties to self-examine and grow. Therefore, in some instances, it's not as easy as in others. So it depends on where God has you in your life and where your life is going and what areas that growth and development is needed. Pause, and we'll be back very soon. We have returned, and I'll touch on two out of the three problems that we are faced with when we attempt to help youth internalize behavior. Anytime you're trying to bring a solution, it's always important to identify the problem. A person can't readily provide a solution without identifying the specific problem for that specific person or group of people. We should be able to identify problems, but we should not focus on the problems. We don't want to be a teacher with the red pen, marking stuff wrong. It's okay to mark stuff wrong, but it's also more excellent to provide the right answers in lieu of or in connection with identifying what's wrong. Therefore, we got two. I'm gonna identify two problems that you may have heard before. You may not have been heard. You may not have heard it before. You may be aware of them. You may not be aware. The first problem is that the new ideas conflict with old existing ones. When a new idea cannot be defined by youth or any other individual for that matter, or it doesn't fit their present reality in their conscious mind, their defense mechanism is initiated subconsciously. Defense mechanisms spring up from our subconscious, which is referred to the memory bank, where the thoughts connect with the behaviors to protect us from a threat, or really a perceived threat. These are the weapons of warfare are also initiated when a youth is unfamiliar with the person sharing a new idea. Bang, bang. New ideas conflict with old existing ones. If I'm talking to young people and if I give them a term or a statement, maybe God will stir me up to give them a statement, and I can tell they don't understand it because of the facial expression that they give. And then I tell them, make a note of the statement, and I'm going to interpret the statement for you, because at times they can't interpret my statement for me. I have to interpret my statement for them in order for them to get understanding. Therefore, the conflict of interest comes when I'm given a new idea and it conflicts with the old one. Immediately, their defense mechanism will come up because they don't understand the idea or statement that I share, or it's challenging them to come away from old, existing, outdated ideas that have been downloaded in them when they were younger or throughout life. Those defense mechanisms can serve as a protector because it's seen as a perceived threat by the person cognitively, because we camp out at old thoughts and we find what's called a quote unquote sense of safety. The only safe place is growth. There's no other safe place outside of the realm of growing and development as a person. If students don't know me, if they don't know me, then they're more likely to use their defense mechanism to block new ideas. But once, this is why it's important that if you're doing one-on-one groups or one-to-many groups, to tell your story, to be as transparent, because being able to be relational is a connector. And once the young person connects, then they have trust and they can open up. Number two, and the last one for this segment, American culture has taught us that defeat, which is loss, is a bad thing. American culture, I'm just specifying in America because that's what I'm doing. I'm not specifying any other continent or nation. I'm specifically talking about America. What I'm not saying is that this culture is not in other continents or nations or countries, but I'm specifying and I'm centrally focused on America. So American culture has taught us that defeat is a bad thing, because you think like this: if you're a sports fanatic in whatever sport that you may find yourself in, I like to use basketball for an example, because many times if it's a college sport and the team gets to the Final Four and they lose, people crying because of the hard work that they put in, all the hours of sweat, the minutes, the days, the hours of sweat, being in practice, watching film. They worked hard to get to this point and they lost. This ideology is a byproduct of self-preservation, though. Because I say that because in loss, there is growth and development. See, we have the tendency to take something that we observe in a sporting aspect in that industry and we apply it to our personal lives. We internalize that, and when we go into a situation, let's say for example a job or career opportunity, and it's come to the end where we need to grow and graduate, we mourn over that. And it's okay to mourn because that's a part of the process. However, if we camp out and we upset at the employer and we have bitterness and we have resentment, then we've fallen under the culture of loss being a bad thing. At times, in some instances, it's good to lose. It's good to lose behavior that's not reflective of who I am. Even though I find a sense of safety and security in that behavior, in the totality of the whole equation, this is dysfunction. This ideology is a byproduct of self-preservation, where the right to have my own opinion and our own opinions promote holding on to our lives. And I said it in terms of your ideas, your thoughts, your experiences, cultures, acquisitions, achievements, and awards, according to an egocentric culture. Therefore, what I'm saying in terms of self-preservation is that I'm holding on to negative connotations, dysfunctional ideas, thoughts, experience, and cultures, achievements that's out of alignment with who God called me to be, because it's according to an egocentric cultural culture that's promotion of self. We have been programmed to believe that holding on to our dysfunctional lives, the lives that are not reflective of who we are, as a place of safety and security. The reality is this, that if I choose to hold on to my lives, an opinion that is void of the truth, void of who I am, I lose safety. I'm gonna simplify this. If I choose to, for me, hold on to who I used to be, the false identity of being a thug, because that was void of truth, void of who I was, then I lose safety, because there's no consistency. Or let me rephrase this. The level or consistency, or the space of consistency in that lifestyle, will not be concrete. It's always fading. That's why you'll find those type of individuals who are self-promoted thugs, they paper chase, because when you get money fast, it goes fast. Therefore, you experience a measure of comfort, but it's not consistent because of the way and the spirit behind of how it was obtained. We truly preserve our lives by surrendering our former life, who we used to be, or who we thought we were, when we went according to egocentric culture, which is void of the truth. We lose the opportunity to experience a new life. When we lose our former life, we gain opportunity to experience our new lives, which is freedom. Bring it into as simplest terms as possible. If I say I no longer want to be a thug, that's not who I am, I surrender that life is over with. I win my new life according to losing the old life. But on the other end, if I say to myself, I want to keep this life because it's about me, as egocentric, because I'm in that culture, I'm in greed, I'm in mammon, then I don't have the opportunity to experience a new life of freedom and consistency, because I'm holding on things that are temporary. You notice that in the hip-hop culture, there are many fads and trends in the culture. The consistency is not there because it's rooted in people affirming who a person is. But the people are talented, but they take their talent and they attach it to their identity, and for their industry, it can make it difficult to work with certain people because they've built their identity and their ego off the talent. Alright, and when I was watching the awards, the BET Awards, the other night, and it wasn't as difficult as it used to be for me, because people are just being fake. And when I say being fake, they're not being true to who they are, who God called them to be. This is Senior Cage. This is part two of how to help youth internalize positive behavior. I've given you two problems that hinder us. Next episode, I'll give you the third, and then we'll talk a little bit more in depth about these three and transition you into the pulling the weeds, we'll talk about pulling the weeds. We'll touch, we'll introduce that and finish out with a possibly part five. I don't know if it's going to be a part four or part five at this point. But thank you for being there. Thank you for listening. This is not as complex as you think. Listen to it a couple of times. Ask questions. And I'll provide insight for you to my best God-given ability. Because it's about us getting the understanding in order for us to apply it. And apply it, we can see improvement and transformative change.